Australians love to hate Canberra. I think it's fair to say that it's popular to criticise the nation's capital. The jibes go like this: it's boring, it's soulless, there are too many roundabouts, and everyone gets lost driving around. But the residents of Canberra know it's a really easy place to live and one that offers the secrets to a quality life, especially for families. Journalist Paul Daly says Canberra is a remarkable place to call home, and he's written about it in his new book on the capital. Paul's in the breakfast studio now. Hello, welcome to breakfast.
G'day, Fran.
Paul, many people love to hate Canberra, but Canberrans laugh that off as envy. Why do you think the broader population gives Canberra such a bad rap?
Look, Fran, I think it's a very long-held, symptomatic kind of tabloid view, really, that public service has no intrinsic value because it's not profit-driven. Never mind that without it there would be no military, you know, no scientific research, medical or space research, you know, no national acquisitions of artistic or cultural artefacts and no archives. I mean, I think it's just a historic misunderstanding of what the public service does.
You think it's actually public service bashing?
Look, I think it's public service and politician bashing. There's, you know, when people say, when they criticise Canberra, look, it's full of politicians. Well, only four federal politicians actually live there. So it's a pejorative for politics, I think.
I wonder if it's one that most national capitals attract, you know, the ones that are designated as national capitals, towns like Washington. Get the same rap?
I think to an extent that's the case, but I think Washington and Brussels, for example, are considered to be places with greater life outside the political hub, if you like. I think there's a misconception that Canberra doesn't have any sort of sense of community or communities that have grown out of the people that have gone there to chance it and stayed. And they're people, of course, that, you know, end up living there and becoming part of communities.
They're people like you. You went there 20 years ago. What did you think when you got there?
Look, I hated it. I was thinking I'd be lucky if I lasted a year, but I quite honestly, I thought I'd made a terrible mistake, and I thought I want to go back to inner city Melbourne, where I came from. I wanted street life and cafes and not the bush. I'm not a person who's grown up with the bush.
Well, while we're speaking honestly, I spent 10 years there. Mm. I never learnt to love it. Mm. I loved my work. I love the people I work with. I love my family. Mm. I love my friends. But I always thought it was, I used to talk about it as a city that was less than the sum of its parts. Yes, it had all those top military minds, science minds, space minds, cultural minds. It had ambassadors from around the world. It had some of the best journalists in the country, the political leaders in and out. But it didn't feel to me like a vibrant city with a heart.
I think that stems from a planning mishap, really. Canberra doesn't have a geographic centre, really. It doesn't have a city centre. There's this place called, a curiously named place called Civic. Now, if you go there looking for the
mistake
heart...
Mistake number one.
Yeah, if you go there looking for the heart of the city, you're not going to find it. You're going to find the elements that make up a city spread throughout the vast suburbs of Canberra, which are, you know, from end to end of Canberra, it's 70 kilometres. So that's a lot of suburban space for a population of 350,000 people to live in.
Doesn't that make it hard to get a sense of community growing in a city?
In some ways I think it makes it easier because the suburbs, people identify very closely with their suburbs in Canberra rather than with the city as a whole. People gravitate to their community groups, their schools, you know, their tennis clubs, their shopping centres, really, because that's where life unfolds. That's where the galleries are. That's where the cafes are. That's where the bars are, and that's where the bands play.
I still contend, we'll get off what I think of Sydney and get to Canberra and get to your history of it, but it's a very strange city to drive into there because there seems to be no people on the roads.
I think driving into city to Canberra from the north along that extension of Northbourne Avenue, I liken it to driving into downtown Minsk. I think it's terrible, absolutely terrible, and you know the current day planners are trying to figure out how to make that more accommodating. But it is awful. I mean, it's like driving into a wasteland, really.
Let's go to the planning because it is a planned city. There's no doubt about that. It's designed by Walter Burley Griffin and his wife Marion. But you say what we've ended up with is not the city that Burley Griffin designed. Why not? What's missing?
Well, I think we got about a third of what the Griffins designed, of what Walter Griffin imagined and what his wife Marion actually drew in these amazing drawings. We know what we didn't get because the drawings are there. There is this amazing triptych which is the view from the imagined view, mind you, done in Chicago of what
was the vision that won the competition
of what Walter saw for the city. Now, if you stand up there today, you can see sort of the ghostly outline of what Walter saw, but so many of the buildings that he envisaged are not there. For example, on one end of the land axis was a thing called the Capitol. On the other end of the land axis, where the Australian War Memorial stands today at the foot of Mount Ainslie, was a thing he called the casino. Now, these
we don't really mean a casino when he says that, do we?
We don't mean a
Tivoli
casino.
Tivoli Garden kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. He had in mind a kind of open-air communal area with a theatre, some alfresco dining, some bars, a beer garden. And bear in mind
talking... what's missing from Canberra.
Exactly. We want a beer garden. I mean, the casino would have been fantastic, but we got something quite diametrically opposed to that, and that is because World War One changed Australia's view of itself. So we got the nation's foremost secular shrine, the War Memorial, in place of the casino.
At one end of the parliament lens, the city is unwarranted infamy. At the other stands the country's foremost secular shrine.
Indeed. I think
the reviled and the revered.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's kind of a really interesting way of seeing Canberra. And I think when you explain that to people who visit, they go, oh, yeah, I get that. I understand. This is actually the story of this country is actually in the landscape of inner Canberra.
So in a sense, what's missing from the Burleigh Griffin vision is nevertheless an essential part of a national capital, which is the War Memorial, which is an important part of history for any nation. And it is a city of the monuments. I mean, most people who visit there go there and love the monuments.
It is a city of monuments, and that was always part of the Griffin plan. But the Griffins had also planned a much more vibrant, densely populated inner city with terrace houses and mixed with retail and, you know, alfresco dining. But the planners of that era, if you can imagine, were quite kind of empire-centric, and they thought, no, we don't want any of this for our modern democracy and its capital. We want our bungalows on big blocks. We want the suburbs. And that's what they got.
It's 27 past 8 on breakfast. Our guest this morning is Paul Daly, who's written a book called Canberra. It's a book about Canberra. Just where you began talking about the public servants and people's resentment of it, do you think it is difficult or changes the nature of city when a great proportion of the population are employed by the public service? Because that, great minds though they might be, hardworking people, terrific people they might be, terrific policymakers they might be, nevertheless it's different than being involved in free enterprise, isn't it?
It is, Fran, because I think it's seen wrongly as a cost burden on the country. Of course, whenever government is going to try and save money, for example, now they're searching for their surplus, they're digging money out of the public service, they're cutting cutting jobs and functions, so that impacts very heavily on the economy and the community of a place like Canberra. But I think it all comes back to, and that's popular. That's popular nationally when governments do that, because the rest of the country largely sees Canberra as a place that spends its money, its taxes.
Yeah, it's a difficult image to shrug. You spend a good deal of the book talking about the building of Canberra, and I love the bit where you talk about the brickworks and the Canberra Reds, because Canberra Reds are much sought after. They're bricks, actually built from the brickworks there, and the brickworks stood there until quite recently. And many of Canberra's oldest buildings are built in this red brick. It's indeed quite a signifier. But you also talk about the kind of people who came to build the capital, and they're not necessarily the kind of people with the kind of characters and characteristics that we associate with the national capital today.
Not at all. I mean, these were pioneers, really, in the 1920s, particularly. A lot of them were returned servicemen. They had fought in World War One, and many of them were otherwise unemployable. And they came to Canberra to build the Parliament, and then the Canberra Hotel, the sewerage works, and the earliest public service buildings there. And these blokes lived in very rustic conditions. They lived under canvas in you know what the weather's like in Canberra. It's freezing in winter and boiling hot and dry in summer. And these guys were scarred mentally and physically. So it was a pretty tough time. Now, Canberra was dry also, but the first bottle-o that went into the camp down at Westlake where these blokes lived collected 2 million bottles. So it tells you that
there's a fair bit of drinking going on.
A fair bit of drinking going on, a fair bit of fighting too.
And of course, there's a fair bit of drinking that goes on once a year too at Summernats, for instance.
Summernats, absolutely.
Canberra is a country, is a city that loves its footy team. It loves the Raiders. Mm. It loved the Brumbies. It loved it when it had a basketball team. Mm. It loves its netball team. You know, there's a whole lot of life going on that is not necessarily the domain of, you know, the image of the very brainy public servant.
No,
necessarily.
That's right. That's right. There's a great cultural life to be had, cultural and sporting life to be had in Canberra. I mean, we're very lucky. We get to see all this fantastic art that, you know, any time we want. We can stroll out on a Sunday afternoon down to the Portrait Gallery or to the National Gallery and have a look at the latest exhibition. For other people in Australia, it's a pilgrimage, and Canberra is often that, a pilgrimage from elsewhere to check out these monuments. And when people do it, they think, oh, yeah, this is great. I like what I'm seeing. But they still don't understand that there's a life and a community and something other going on there as well.
And just before we say goodbye, it is true that Canberra was a city that was very much a compromise because Sydney and Melbourne couldn't agree what should be the capital?
Well, indeed. I mean, Sydney ruled itself out by agreeing that the city would be at least 100 miles away from Sydney. And Melbourne thought it was going to get it by default, really. And Parliament was in Melbourne until 1927. And Melbourne was kind of hoping after the war when the austerity measures were happening. And Canberra very nearly didn't happen. There was a rethink about it that they would keep it by default. So, yeah, it was a compromise.
Paul Daly, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Paul Daly, he loves Canberra, and his book Canberra is published by New South. And Paul will be joining Fenella Kernebone on By Design tomorrow here on RN tomorrow afternoon for a panel discussion about whether it's time to build a new Prime Minister's Lodge in Canberra. And I think if you visited the lodge, Paul, it's fair to say it probably is time to build a new Prime Minister's Lodge.
Well, truly, we've all been to plenty of Christmas drinks parties there, Fran, and, you know, it's pretty run down.
Well, the lawns are better than the house, that's how I'd put it.
They are.
So you can hear more from Paul in that discussion with Fenella on By Design tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. And to think it was nearly so different if the Burleigh Griffins hadn't won. The person who came third, apparently, was a French architect called Donné Alfred Agache. This is all in Paul's book. And he had envisaged a formal European-style city through which a wild, ungainly Molonglo River meandered, much as the Seine does within Paris. Imagine that.